like a movie, then she's calling. Forest fires, cougars mauling. Take a chance and roll the dice one day. If you're a DM, players find you. Millennials can join this quest too. Expedition, we're gonna find a way. The Grizzly Pace. The Grizzly Pace. The Grizzly Pace.
Hello again. Well, once I start, I've got to carry on. What is it? I've started, so I'll finish. Yeah, another episode. Who would have thunk it? But, yeah, there's been a lot going on recently, and I feel like I had a few things to say, you know, to update you on. I think that's the line, isn't it? Some updates. Yeah, there has been a lot going on. It has, of course, been just about a week since we got back from GaryCon. That's been, you know, it's taken me about a week to really decompress fully and to, you know, think about the impact of that wonderful 5 days. You know, I've already gushed endlessly about how amazing it was. But yeah, I think it really was an absolutely spectacular convention. I think there was a lot of pent-up need for it amongst everyone that was there. You could feel this just overwhelming sense of joy to be there. And something weird happened. It was like a inflection point for me. You know, for the last 2 years, we've been just extremely, extremely mask forward, he says, coining a phrase. We've been super careful about everything with masks and sanitizers, you know, keeping hands clean, and you know, not eating in restaurants indoors and all of that. And something just tipped for me. Didn't for Medina, my wife, but it tipped for me at GaryCon, because, you know, obviously all the mask mandates are done. So, you know, there was no, technically there was no reason why anyone had to wear masks in at the convention. And when we got to the hotel, it was kind of weird because no one was wearing masks anywhere. And we still were. And you had to wear them at the tables, but in the, you know, where there's probably least chance of, because there's a certain amount of distance, but like in the packed bars and communal areas, everyone was like right up against each other, drinking and chatting, and you know, and I figured, well, look, everyone else is doing it. And yeah, for the first time, I socialised with people that we hadn't tested mutually, and well, we got away with it. None of us caught anything coming back. But it was this immense, oh, it was like a weight lifting off my shoulders. You know, I'm not actually. It's not like a genuine change, because I still wear masks in every day. But it was so nice to actually have a few days when we could see each other's faces properly and communicate properly. It's really hard running a game in a noisy room when you've got a mask on. Really is. So, but yeah, that aside, yeah, it just felt very special, this year's GaryCon. I don't have a lot of reference points. I've only been to one before, but that's it. I'm now. Unless something stops us going, I think we're going to go every year from now on. I just think it's the best. Unlike Gen Con, which claims to be, which again, I haven't been, so I can't say, but Gen Con claims to be the best 4 days in gaming. But I think GaryCon is, was it three? I don't know how long Gen Con is. The sad thing is, in a way, the timing of it was bad for one reason, that Chaosium, Chaosium convention is in a couple of weeks time, and or not even that, in a week's time, I think, or it's happening now, I don't know, it's happening like really soon, and it was just too close to, you know, there was no way I could justify going to it, even though I think it would have been my con of cons. Well, it's the first one, so who knows how it's playing out. It's in Ann Arbor, Michigan, not that far from where Garrycon is, so maybe if they get closer together, maybe you can go from one straight to the other, but that would be insane. But I can't imagine it'll be as good as Garrycon, but obviously because it's Chaosium, because it'll be all Cthulhu all the time, and people that I know and respect massively from the Chaosium team and just generally from the Call of Cthulhu community are going to be there. People I admire and respect massively and love their products. It would have been pretty awesome to meet them. But it's hard to capture that specialness of Garrycon. I think there's something about the, even though it hasn't been going a long time, there feels something extremely nostalgic about it that ties us back to our past, to our childhood. And that's what's amazing about it, and it being in a special place and all of that. And Ann Arbor, why do they name towns after people in America, you know? And why is it called Ann? Is it a harbor? Is it an arbor? Is it a tree? I don't know. What does Ann Arbor mean? Please, if you know what Ann Arbor means, call in. So, yeah, that's just given me this massive feeling of joy. Everything around Garrycon. It's warm and sunny now compared to the -5 degrees. I think summer is here. You don't really get spring, it seems, like in California. It switches straight from winter to summer. And, it's going to be like 29 centigrade tomorrow. That's actually too hot. We're actually heading off for a few days to somewhere even hotter to escape the... Well, somewhere a lot hotter with a swimming pool. We're going to Palm Springs on Friday for a few days because it's spring break and our little... mermaid needs constant water supply, which we don't have here. So I've recorded a few episodes wandering the heat baked streets of Palm Springs, so you'll probably be hearing a few more from me next week. But anyway, that is going to be nice. It brings a bit of a break to my gaming schedule, which has been pretty intense recently. And yeah. As I said, there's a lot going on. There's a lot going on. But first, let's talk about new TSR. TSR 3, new TSR. That flaming dumpster fire, that perpetual, infinite flaming dumpster fire that is new TSR. It is surreal what is going on there. I think everyone has come to the conclusion that it's actually just a big scam, that there is no new TSR, that there is no... There is no product. There is no. There will be nothing. It's just a scam to get money, and Justin Lanasa and this Dave Thompson. I don't know what his name is. The guy that's doing Star Frontiers, new Star Frontiers reboot, the vaporware of all vaporware. There's so much nonsense going on over that, and it is hilarious. So, you know, check out Tenkar's Tavern. He's the one that's been following them most assiduously. His videos are very funny about what's going on there. Of course, there's a lot of bad blood between him and Lanasa. There's some doxing that's been going on. There's some back and forth, but the latest is absolutely hilarious because if you've been following it, they've been new TSR have been promoting this new Star Frontiers book, which is, you know, the one thing you got to give them credit for, those idiots at new TSR, is they actually know the products that are going to get an emotional response from the old grognard. So, you know, obviously they were sort of. And this isn't them, but TSR2, following the tradition of TSR2, who put out the new Top Secret, which of course that's gonna pull on the heartstrings. That was Jason, the guy that was on Roll for Initiative when it first started. I can't remember his name. Jason. Anyway, he's a good guy. Nothing to do with TSR3. There's all that shenanigans about who owned the logo, the TSR. He was involved in Gygax magazine. So much bullshit goes on around this stuff. It really is crazy. But anyway, the fact that they're doing Star Frontiers is a very clever move, because a lot of us have amazingly fond memories of Star Frontiers. I've still got my original box set. It is in a terrible condition. I think it was under a big, heavy pile of books for a long time in my parents' loft, because it's just crushed. But when I go back to England in a few months' time, I'm actually going to set and bring it back. I just want to have it there. Because one thing I will know is that there will never be a new edition of Star Frontiers, even though there are photographs that New TSR have put up of them holding the book, which is, of course, a fake. But what's been really amusing is that a bunch of guys have put an unofficial new Star Frontiers fan site up, and it is hilarious. Go and find it on Facebook. It's so funny what's going on over there, because the new TSR guys are sort of lurking around and trying to sue them for copyright infringement on a product that they don't own the copyright to, using art, stock art that they don't own either. And they're going to sue them for these spoof covers that were very, very funny. There's a lot of fun games going on there, which I'm sure everyone will appreciate. Okay, I'm about to go up a steeper bit of the hill, if you haven't already heard me wheezing. So let's see how this bit goes. Whew. Yeah, I'm doing my trying to get my steps in. I've really fallen off the old step wagon. I'm still running pretty much every day, but I've cut out the afternoon walk largely, so bad me. I guess doing the run is probably the most important thing. The walk was like the cherry on the icing of a very painful cake. And yeah, so there's a lot of funny stuff going on there. I mean, given what arseholes they are, they're certainly providing a lot of entertainment for the community. So you've got to give them that. Now, there's been a lot going on games-wise in the Goodman brain, the Goodman's games. See what I did there? Goodman's games. I am no relation to Joe Goodman, founder of Goodman Games. Unless we are from a long separated lineage going back to somewhere in Middle Europe, I imagine that the English Goodmans, of which there are a lot, are not related to the Goodmans of the Joe, of the Americans. Although we do have some American family, like a couple of generations back, certainly some Canadians, but yeah, can't imagine. Be funny if it was though, but it's a very common name. Anyway, it's all happening. It is actually going to fucking happen with an F. We are going to be doing a Twitch stream for Goodman Games. I've been chatting to Elena. Oh no, it's not Dave Thompson, it's Elena Thompson. That's why I was thinking Thompson. So whoever this Dave guy is that wrote is not Dave Thompson, it's Dave something. Sorry. Simpson? That doesn't sound right either. I really should get my facts right, shouldn't I, before I make these spurious claims of authorship. But anyway, Elena, who is the Twitch producer, very lovely person, very funny. She played in my Mutant Crawl Classics game at Garrycon and subsequently asked me to come and help her out on the Twitch channel. I think now that we've spoken more, I didn't really have any idea of what they were trying to do with it. You know, they have a lot of stuff going on there, and their YouTube channel is pretty voluminous, going back many years with hundreds of videos. But they have very little MCC content. Almost none. They certainly have no actual plays, as far as I understand. Excuse me, it's very hot. Hot, no, steep. And rather than it being an overwhelming sense of majestic game mastering that persuaded her, I think it was the fact that I was actually running an MCC game at all. So my self-importance took a little, you know, a couple of notches down, because it probably could have been anyone that running MCC that should have asked. But that aside, we had a really good chat yesterday, and we've got a kind of a schedule planned. I have a group. It is a sort of hybrid group. And here's the thing. I mean, partially chosen because of the player dynamics, but actually more chosen because you've got to have a good microphone and a camera. I want this to look decent. The good thing is that Elena will be doing all the, what's it called? The OPD? No, OCD? It's that overlay. It's that video overlay that you can basically composite various video streams and graphics and whatever onto a background and broadcast it onto Twitch. It's what all the Twitchers do, all the RPG Twitchers do. I don't know how any of it works. And it's good because I don't have to figure any of that stuff out. She just does it. And she will manage the audience, so I don't have to like be looking at a chat window. I'm terrible at that when I'm running games, even my friends. At the end, I'll check back, I'll look at the chat log, and I'll realise that everyone was making all these silly jokes all the way through, and I never saw any of them. Because, you know, I've got a lot else to do. I've got the book, I've got the Roll 20, I'm trying to interact with them via the video. I can't be looking at a chat log at the same time. I mean, how do people do that? Anyway, so the good news is Elena will be doing that. I think they'll even be trying to get money. Good God, trying to get money? Well, tips. I mean, I won't be getting any of it, but there's this thing called Bits. I'd not heard of any of this, where you can just basically tip people through Twitch. I mean, I knew people do this sort of thing, but do they really? I mean, they do for the big ones, but... Well, anyway, so the good thing is we're playing MCC. Shame I just went out and bought the DCC rulebook, assuming we would be playing DCC. But no, we're going to play MCC, which I know reasonably well. I'm going to have to revise a bit better because I'm constantly having to look up these funny little rules. And actually, one of the things we were talking about was I've never run like a campaign. It seems fairly fragmentary. There is no setting. There's an implied setting, but there's no setting, there's no campaigns, there's no meta plot. There's just a bunch of modules. Not even that many. I think there's 12. I got most of them because I backed the Kickstarter. And holy crap. This hill's going on forever. Sorry about the breathing. Now you'll be like, should I give you my heart rate or something by the time I get to the top? So we're gonna start with a little one shot and see where it goes, really. Haven't decided which one yet. I think what we'll do is we'll actually take a bunch of characters that made it through Hive of the Overmind. Ooh, there was a weird insect on my arm, which I blew off. I didn't blow it off. I didn't blow off an insect. I mean, I blew it and it, you know what I mean. Get your mind out the gutter. I'm going downhill now, so it should be less breathy, a little less breathy. So we actually played through with most of the group that will be on the stream. We played through Hive of the Overmind as a palate cleanser between scenarios 2 and 3 of the Berlin campaign. And it was good fun. It was really good fun. I contemplated making a podcast out of it, but then decided not to. And here's the sort of slight rub for me. And I guess it doesn't really matter on a Twitch stream so much because people are tuning in for something a bit different, I think. But for an actual edited podcast, especially Grizzly Peaks Radio, which is so much about storytelling and narrative and character interaction, a game like musical classics doesn't seem to lend itself to that type of play, because you're playing these very weird mutants and weird life forms that probably don't think or interact like humans. As I said, there's no grand narrative that you just go to a, you're in a situation and you have to survive or find some loot. They're dungeon crawls. And, you know, I know there's a lot of D&D podcasts out there, but I don't think most of them are dungeon crawls. I think most of them actually are almost, you know, D&D just happens to be the system they're in. They're more like fantasy stories, you know, with combats and what have you. But I think on a Twitch stream, I think people are there for something a bit different. So maybe having like 60% of it being dice rolling and combat is fine. But I still think it's kind of a bit boring to actually watch the whole thing. I don't know. I'm going to have to try and think about how I can bring more character interaction into it, because up to now there hasn't been a lot in my MCC games, just for the reasons I stated. But I think with a bit of work on my part, finding the right scenario as well, I think there's one that I was looking at that I think there's more potential for character interaction there. There's other groups trying to do the same thing that you are, and you encounter them and you can kind of interact with them and negotiate with them. So I think that's good. Who's singing? There's someone singing nearby. I know, someone's playing opera. Someone's playing some opera music or something like that. So yeah, that's big. That's big. So we're going to have a trial run, I think, in a few weeks' time. And then the first Twitch stream is going to go live. I think we're going to aim for the 26th of May. Whew, so that's going to be something. Now, On the other fronts, most of my campaigns, and I include Mars in this, even though it's a long way away from, you can hear it a bit. It is opera. It's, I know this. Is it Nessun Dorma? Is it Nessun Dorma? Is it Pavarotti? It's not Pavarotti. I don't know. God, I don't know anything about opera. Yeah, I just showed my incredible philistinism there. It probably wasn't Nessun Dorma. So, yeah. And even though Mars, we are halfway, I guess, halfway-ish through the Australia chapter. So there's only really one real chapter left, and then the denouement. Which could actually be quite a big chunk, knowing the way I go off script. But the fact we've been playing for 2.5 years, it feels like we're close to the end. But the other ones definitely are close to the end. And in fact, one of them has ended, and we've now started a new arc, really, a completely new arc, new vibe. Two-Headed Serpent is still ongoing. We've got a long way to go in that. But masks, you know, and so the reason I'm telling you this is that it is an interesting thing to think about, is where you go next when you've done this big, or not even big, but just somehow this very conclusive campaign with a group, and you want to keep playing, and you want to recapture that magic, but you've got to almost start again from scratch, and you've got to almost reset your expectations. So the Old Farts campaign, it hasn't ended, but it's just changed into something completely different. So it was the White Dwarf sessions. I think, you know, I've read a lot of the White Dwarf scenarios, and I think other than the Horse of the Invisible, which, as I've said before, we can't run because Scott knows it too well. I don't think it's not that great, to be honest. Other than that, that the other ones that I've read just didn't do anything for me. There's one called the Paddington Horror, I think, which could be okay, and we could actually play it because basically they're back in England and they're back in London, and I think, as I've probably said before, we are now going to be doing Bookhounds of London. I'm not sure whether I've told you that yet. So I don't know why or how, but I just picked up a copy of Book Hounds of London, which is a Trail of Cthulhu campaign written by Kenneth Haidt. I think I was just looking for a London 1930s scenarios, and that one just, you know, when you're searching, that one comes up. Now, of course, I've had to throw out all the Trail of Cthulhu rules in it because I don't have a Trail of Cthulhu and we're going to be running It's Called Cthulhu. And Scott has also made it quite clear that he does not rate that game. So I will take his word for it. It does, it seems simplistic and yet unnecessarily complicated at the same time. And I know that Gumshoe has that amazing innovation of not having to roll to find the clue. But whatever. I'll give them the clue anyway. We said this before, haven't we? It was a solution in search of a problem. The problem was one that, yes, if you're an idiot, you will make that problem in your game of not giving them the vital clue that keeps the... But, I mean, frankly, do you run games like that? I don't run games like that. If I know they need to get a clue, they will get it somehow. If they don't get it in that moment, there'll be another way. Because how else do you move the fucking story forward? Do you just say, well, that's it? You failed. Right, next. I mean, maybe some keepers do that. But then, as I said, they're idiots. Because, you know, you're shooting yourself in the foot. You're not just, you know, stymieing the players. You're making life difficult for yourself. Because, well, then you've got to come up with something else. So... Yeah, look, I get it. There's an elegance to the system because it's more like how much are you willing to invest to get the full picture? It's like the picture gets revealed more and more the more you're willing to invest. So you have point pools and you can spend them to get more and better clues. And it is, yeah, it's elegant. And actually, you know, it's kind of cool because it also works. You can just easily adapt that for the Call of Cthulhu rules that, you know, they automatically get a clue, but if they search and they get a regular success, they get the next level clue. And if they get a hard success or an extreme, they get the next level. Anyway, the fact that you have to write three clues for every situation just makes life a bit difficult though, doesn't it? This is not the three clue rule, by the way. This is not, there are three different clues in different locations that point to the same thing. These are three levels of clue in one location that tell you different things that somehow intersect with other clues in other places. So the complexity of writing those scenarios seems unnecessary as well. I mean, it's hard enough writing one level. When you've got to write three levels, I mean, come on. Anyway, I've read the Book Hounds of London book. The scenario is, I think, could be excellent or it could be a pain. And we will see. The reason I say it could be a pain is that it is highly, highly investigative. And this lot, if you've been listening to the actual plays, you'll know that investigation is not exactly their strong suit. You know, as Scott has said on The Good Friends of Jackson Elias, they subscribe to the percussive investigation technique. That's the one where you get your clues by hitting things. They're not quite that violent, but they're certainly not the ones that would spend a long time in the library. Yeah, they're more likely just to get into as much trouble as they possibly can and see what falls out the other end. Yeah. I punched him so hard, all his hit points fell out the back of him. So, okay, what's in the little library? I always go past this. Actually, there's some quite cool stuff in it today. There's a book called By the Sword. That sounds a little bit fantasy. There's a Stephen King book about the Kennedy assassination, I think, 11-22-63. Yeah, that's the date that Kennedy was assassinated. What else? There's The Tales of Animal Heroes. Sounds a bit worthy. My Almost Flawless Tokyo Dream. There's Architectural Digest. Ooh, that's a bit fancy. Bunch of Patricia Cornwell novels. No, there was some fantasy here. Obviously, someone's picked that up. See, fantasy sounds right. So, Book Hounds of London. We have actually started that campaign already, but it was really just a tiny bit at the end of the last session, and we're not playing again for a while. And so, we will see. But what I'd really love, actually, even if this particular scenario doesn't work out, I think this is where we shift to this different kind of mode of play. Not mode of play, that's the wrong way of putting it. Just a different ambience. The ambience up to now has been old codgers farting around, and the threats have been almost comical at times. Yeah, not almost comical. I mean, Timmy the dog, fishy smugglers, the shenanigans. Actually, Ghost Jackal Kill, I think, got a little bit more serious, but not particularly. The last episode with the toupee and the torn painting. I mean, what can I say? As someone has said to me, I won't say who, how do you expect to play a serious Call of Cthulhu game with Barney as one of your players? Now, Barney, if you're listening, that is not meant as a slight on you. I think it's a wonderful compliment about your wit and humour. Yeah, take it that way. Take it that way. Not the fact that you're a chaos agent who likes nothing more than blowing up other people's games. Not that at all. I do not ever intend you to think that. Ever. Ever. Okay? So, but this book, Hounds, this goes into darker, much darker territory, inevitably, as it's Kenneth Hyde, and much more serious, like, I guess, realism, perhaps, which is a funny thing to say about Call of Cthulhu, but it's a very realistic kind of London of the 30s, and I'm loving that, because I think that's the thing that's got me so excited about Berlin, is the realness of that setting, the ability for me to immerse myself in it, and being in London in the 1930s is just going to be a wonderful trip for me, because I spent a lot of my life living in London, and my dad was born in literally exactly where we're setting the campaign, or their base, which is a bookshop called Watson's Antiquities, and it's literally situated right opposite my dad's house where he was born and grew up. So. And obviously I did that deliberately, it wasn't just random, but so it's kind of, I wouldn't want to say emotional for me, because it's not like I feel, but I somehow feel that I'll be able to explore a space and time that my dad lived through, so that's kind of cool, but of course there weren't tentacle monsters, at least none that he told me about when he was growing up. I mean, there were eel pies. There were pie and mash shops with eels, and I suppose that's a tentacle monster, isn't it? But I'm not sure he was allowed to eat eels, you see. Being Jewish, I don't think eels are allowed. They don't have scales. Yeah, you see, kosher. If you eat something, a fish, you can only eat fish with scales. So I don't think eels have scales. So maybe he snuck in. I once had pie and mash, and it's fucking horrible. Like the pie, you know, the eel pie, pie mash with the eel liquor. It's bad. It's bad. I don't know why people like it. Anyway, bloody hell, this is rambling on. So I'll try and wrap this up before I get run over. So many loud trucks hammering around the neighborhood this afternoon. And so then, but the big one, I've left the biggie till the end, is our Berlin campaign is wrapping up. And what I want to do, and I have some questions for myself about this, is I think the players are into it. And I did a quick poll amongst the Patreon subscribers, the peakers, and it was pretty unanimous. We're going to move it on. We're going to move time on to the full horror of Nazi Germany. So we're going to move on to 1939, actually. I was thinking 38, but no, we're actually going to the early 1939. The Anschluss has already happened, so Austria is already annexed. Czechoslovakia has been invaded, but the war hasn't actually started yet. It started a few months later in 1939. And we'll be moving the characters on. They'll be now living in Vienna, having maybe got out sometime in the mid-30s as they saw the inevitable tide of history moving in a way that they didn't want, of course. And we're going to be running it in the Achtung Cthulhu setting. And I found a great campaign. I think it's called Visions of Atlantis or something like that. Written by, as I discovered, Lynn Hardy. So amazing. Lynn, I'm running your campaign. If you're listening, I don't think you are listening. But, you know, I've interviewed you the funny thing was, I was actually contemplating running another one of your campaigns for them. I was seriously thinking about running Children of Fear, but I so fell in love with the Berlin setting that I just wanted to carry on. And maybe we'll run Children of Fear at some point in the future, because it looks amazing. I haven't read much of it, but it really looks amazing. I think the level of immersion I would need to do to pull that off is huge. I feel like I've already done the legwork with Berlin, and I know a lot more about Europe than I do about Tibet, that's for damn sure. Although I did study Buddhism at university, I know a little bit about Buddhism. Not enough to be of any use, but, you know, I know the Theravada and the Mahayana, and I know that, you know, the Four Noble Truths and the, you know, I know that Nirvana means blowing out. See, blowing out. We get back to blowing out. So Nirvana doesn't mean what people think it means. It doesn't mean heaven or some kind of... It actually means extinction. It means the blowing out of consciousness. So in the Buddhism, I think the Mahayana Buddhism, I don't know which one, the really hardcore one, the ultimate aim is to remove your consciousness, to negate it, because consciousness is the sort of engenders all of these bad things, all these negative things. What is it? Hatred, desire, and aversion, desire, and something else. I can't remember. So it's pretty kind of, it's not very touchy-feely, Buddhism. It really isn't. It's saying that what, you know, all your normal human thoughts and processes and emotions and feelings are actually bad for you. You know, which is why achieving Nirvana is so damn hard, because we feel so attached. Oh, attachment, that's it. Attachment, aversion, and delusion or illusion. Those are the three things that our human minds create that cause us so much pain and suffering. And that when you can blow it all out, then there's no more suffering anymore. Which is why you get this archetype of the Zen master just sitting there not being affected by anything going on around them. But it feels really cold and bleak to me, and maybe that's because I could never really understand it, being such a hothead. It seemed like this is like denying everything that I feel is me. And I suppose that's the point, is that you feel these things are you, but they're not, because there is no you. There's no permanent you ever. We just make that stuff up to explain what we are experiencing. Because if we really experienced ourselves as we truly should, it'd be pretty scary, because the center cannot hold. There is no center. There's just passing thoughts and passing emotions. And that the ultimate aim is to not make any impact on the world, to walk through the pond without creating ripples. See, I can go on about this at length, even though I don't know anything about it. That's the wonderful thing about doing a podcast, is that no one's there to tell you, stop it, you moron, what are you talking about? At least they may be thinking it, but I can't hear them thinking it. So I'll carry on. Anyway, I'm not ready to run Children of Fear, because the mythology is something I don't really know anything about. And I think that's a big core. So, Lynn wrote Shadows of Atlantis? Visions, I think Shadows of Atlantis, actually. Don't think about it. And it is brilliant. It seems to be brilliant. I've only read about 10 pages and it already seems brilliant. And it's kind of expanding, and it becomes this I won't say what it becomes, in case my players are listening, but I know that this bunch don't, so apart from Daniel, maybe. But it becomes much bigger. And I think that's nice, because the Berlin has been a bit claustrophobic, you know? They've been pretty much in like a 3-square-mile radius for the entire campaign, apart from when they travelled to another dimension. But even that was still theoretically in the same place, just a different dimensional version of it. So they've never even been outside of Berlin in the whole, you know, year that we've been playing. So this is nice because it broadens the horizon, takes them out of their comfort zone, because their comfort zone is no longer a comfort zone. It's populated by the worst humans that have ever existed. Although that is quite a quite a hit list, isn't it? You know, the worst humans that ever existed. I think many cultures have vied for that title. The Nazis kind of win by default, but come on. Pol Pot, Stalin, Lady Mao, stroke Chairman Mao, Rwanda genocide, the Congo, the Belgian Congo, the British in India, I suppose the Romans, the Egyptians. You know, we're good. Humans are good at this shit. That's the one thing I think that, you know, in future millennia, when we're long gone, and somehow the records will be dug up by a future alien species, or the ants, or the cockroaches, or the rats, the mega rats, they'll go, God, those humans were really good at killing each other. They put so much creativity into it. You've got to give them that. Glad they managed to finally work it all out and kill them all themselves completely off, and thus leave the planet to us. So they'll be sort of revered for their generosity. Where am I going? So, and here is my ethical dilemma. And this is talked about by the writers, and, you know, Scott has talked about it, because although he didn't write Act on Cthulhu, he was involved in World War Cthulhu, wrote scenarios, I think, for that. If you, and this trope is very, goes back a long way, the occult Nazi, you know, fusion, especially with Cthulhu mythos, if you subscribe the horrors of World War II to the great old ones, you are saying that it wasn't the humans' choice to enact those horrors. And of course it was. That's what makes it the ultimate horror, is that it's not some monster doing it, it's just your next door neighbor, which is a horrifying, terrifying thought. The extent of the German resistance to the Nazis is apparently hugely overstated. It really was welcomed. And if you look at what's happening in Russia now, that I think Putin's got 76% approval for the war. That's what happens. That's what happens when you have authoritarian dictatorships. Then it may be just fear. Maybe 50% of those people are saying it because they're terrified, and only 50% really believe in it. But either way, no one's gonna raise a objection. And if you do, you disappear. You end up tortured in the gulag. So, you know, these are human beings doing these things. These aren't great old ones. This is not the influence of the Cthulhu cult. This is not Nazi wizards trying to open the gate to Azathoth. This is human beings. So you've got to be really careful, I think, when you run these campaigns, regardless of whether they're being broadcast anywhere, hell, even in your home group. And as a Jew who's parents on my mother's side, and grandparents, some survived the Nazi occupation, others died. As a child of that generation, I feel it is incumbent on me not to minimize the human horror. And that's going to be a tough one to pull off. It might get pretty fucking dark, really. But I'm willing to explore that. I hope my players are. Well, we're going to have some serious conversations before we start, because I don't want this to be a joke. And I feel that my Berlin group are actually pretty good at that. We do laugh at things, but they're also pretty good at taking it seriously. Won't say anything about my other groups for once, but yeah. Heavy shit, man. Heavy shit. And I feel ready for it. I feel like we can do it. I feel like, you know, it's just another color, another brush in my brush box, another colour to paint with in my palette. So, right, I finished the walk. What was that? 48 minutes. Fuck me. Sorry about that. I will try and compress this down. I speed it up by 90%, so you'll only have to listen to it for 44 minutes. But even so, good luck and see you soon.
It's a game we're role-playing. I'm a stranger and you're making mistakes. Smell you.